Welcome back, everyone. I'm Nathaniel, and this is the Film Experience. You may recall last week I spoke with Katie about Frozen and Saving Mr. Banks, but this week the band's all back together. Joe Reed from The Wire, Nick Davis from Nick's Flick Picks, and Katie Rich from Vanity Fair, and myself from the Film Experience, and we're going to be talking about Wolf of Wall Street.
Hi.
Hello.
Sorry. I opened Skype and then forgot to log in. So it was just like sitting there on the login screen. And I was like, oh, where are these guys?
You're like, damn them for being late.
I know, basically.
Yeah.
I'm such a hypocrite.
So, Katie, I was just talking with Joe and Nick that it was so weird we didn't have to apologize for talking all over each other because there was only two of us.
I know. And we waited patiently and everyone got all the jokes. I don't think there weren't nearly enough jokes though, because we didn't have
That's
Nick.
true. Yeah, we didn't have you
There was
guys.
the one about how you don't need us unless not a joke.
Yeah,
No,
that was a
that
very
was
funny joke. Very, very funny.
My agent wasn't super into that. I calmed her down.
Talked her off the ledge.
Yeah.
So, before we proceed into this week's, do you guys have anything pressing about Frozen that you need to get out or Saving Mr. Banks? Any piggybacking on what we said?
I just would have agreed with both of you about everything you said about Frozen. I really love it.
Oh,
I
good.
don't like I don't like Saving Mr. Banks at all, but
I was kind of yelling into my whatever I was listening to, I guess it would have been my iPod at the time, about how I don't remember a single song from Tangled, and that Let It Go is like three times any song from Tangled.
Oh, okay.
But
Ooh.
that's fine. You guys don't have to agree with me.
Wait, you don't remember Mother Knows Best?
I mean, that's probably if any of them, I do, but I couldn't certainly sing it to you. Whereas,
Yeah.
like, I may never stop singing Let It Go, is the thing. And,
I
like, I may end
definitely
up being murdered for it, but whatever. Like,
How quickly do you think that ends up on all the karaoke machines, or is it already
oh,
there?
not quickly enough for my, like, the sooner the better. So that I
Well,
can embarrass the fuck out of myself trying to sing it when I get too drunk at karaoke.
Derek already knows the song, which speaks not
Oh.
only to how quickly the show tune sing-along bar here has absorbed it, but also given that he's like, what movie is that from? What is
Wait,
he doing it?
Nick, that
Like,
place you took me to is already playing it?
yes, its
Nick,
cultural reach is officially profound.
I'll be there in like 29 hours. Like, I will just, I don't care if there's an Arctic blast or whatever the fuck is coming,
Yeah,
polar ice
I do
storm.
currently inhabit the movie. Like, I'm looking outside, and it is like the climax of the movie.
Y'all pissed Elsa off something terrible in
Apparently.
Chicago. I don't understand.
It's because I said that thing about how I just hate Idina Menzel's vowels so much. Like, is this really pretty? I think this isn't pretty when you sing. I'm sorry.
Wow.
Yeah, but yes, so Let It Go all the way.
It was so fun to listen to you guys.
Yeah, it really was. I enjoyed it very, very much.
Yeah, thank you. Now everything is back the way it's supposed to be with you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you guys were talking while I was actually in a theater watching Wolf of Wall Street. So really, I'm like doubly jealous of you both.
Which brings us, today's show is underwritten by Stratton
There's
Oakmont. We're going to be
a
just
lion pacing through my room right now.
someone on Twitter, and I've already forgotten who. I apologize because it was very a sharp observation. Was talking about that moment in the opening credits where you actually think Stratton Oakmont
Yeah.
is one of the producing firms for the movie because of all those tags that always start
Yeah.
movies. And that is really a sharp little moment. But the movie's 3 hours long, so we'll jump right in. Did it earn its running time?
Ooh, it's an interesting question to start with. I am a fan of the movie who also thinks it's too long, so I think there's like a maybe answer to that, in that it is, I think it's really great, but I also had several moments where I was wondering why I was still watching a scene that was playing out. But the running time, I think, is not, I mean, I have a problem with excessively long movies, but it's something that I kind of got over a problem with because of the way this movie presented itself and the way that I think I was supposed to walk out feeling about it. I think the exhaustion I felt at the end of it was part of the plan. And I've heard that argument made by other people, but I've come around to thinking that way.
Isn't that in a way like sort of self you
Like
know
making excuses.
like your take on something is a way to reinforce your feelings about it. Like, I was supposed to be sick of it by
Oh,
the
wait.
end.
you know, like just making excuses for whatever it is. Yeah, it totally could be
like
that
circular religious, you know, circular knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I think that the topic of the movie kind of lends itself to that. But at the same time, I feel like the length of it is almost like, of all the debates that have been going on about it, like that's the one that is almost the least contentious. Like, there's so many other crazy arguments happening about this movie there.
Yeah, I didn't want to start right into the condemns or celebrates.
I honestly think that it's been a fascinating discussion. I like it better when people aren't mean, but the fact that there's a movie that no one can stop talking about thrills me. I love it.
I think it's a fascinating discussion, too. I just wish people would discuss it in actual terms and not this fake, like, does Martin Scorsese not understand that these people are bad? Because, like, so few people are actually saying that he doesn't. It becomes so easy to just be like, obviously Marty knows these people are bad. Done. End of conversation. And it's like, that's actually the beginning of the conversation, I think.
That's like not actually what you want to talk about.
Right, right. And I just feel like a lot of people just got really sort of shut down. And I think that open letter from the daughter was, it was both the best and the worst thing. It was the best thing because it really got everybody talking about.
From the daughter of who?
She's the daughter of a guy who was, he lost money from Chattanooga. It's not like he was one of those, like, nobodies in the Midwest on the phone. Like, he had a private jet. He was really rich. I'm not totally clear on what that connection is, but basically he suffered at the hands of what we see going on in Wolf of Wall Street.
So this daughter of this guy writes the open letter about how, you know, Scorsese is bringing Belfort, like, prominence and glory and kind of basically glorifying what he does. So all the debate then becomes, well, he's not, you know, glorifying this. He's actually, like, condemning this guy. And my whole thing was just, like, he can be doing both. Like, a guy like Jordan Belfort isn't exactly going to be, like, bummed that Martin Scorsese is showing him as, like, the devil incarnate in a movie.
Well, because he already showed himself as that.
Exactly. Like, like, this was based on his book, and I feel like the whole thing just becomes this kind of, like, for a lot of the debate, and, like, Katie, you were exempt from, like, all of this, because you have been, like, a very, like, in good faith arguer of that movie, and thank God for people, you know, like you, I feel like.
Thank you.
Because it's just been, like, keeping me sane. There was just a lot of that that was kind of willfully being like, well, you don't get it. You don't understand. You don't understand that movies can have, you know, I guess what you want is movies with good characters and with bad characters getting their comeuppance. And life did give Jordan Belfort a comeuppance, so why should this movie? And it's like, yes, I get it. But this is also a movie that is having a fucking blast showing this guy's worst excesses. And, you know, I know that they are having a blast with it because they keep doing it over and over and over again for 3 hours.
And encouraging the audience to love the spectacle as well.
Well, and it assumes it assumes an audience that will love that spectacle. And that's a lot of my problem with it too, is that it really assumes that everybody, and this is where that those two Richard Brody reviews now come into play, where it's just sort of like, because he's adopting this procedure too. It's just like, if you say that you don't, that you aren't titillated by this shit, you're lying. And it's like, no.
Yeah.
Like, there really is possible that, like, giant swaths of your audience are not, like, turned on by this. Like, honestly, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I mean, we don't all get turned on by the same things.
Right.
Dead from the neck down and dead from the neck up was not a characterization I like to hear about myself for having some issues with the movie.
Right.
I'm like, right. I'm a paraplegic now, but, like, I...
But your neck looks fabulous, so it's fine.
But I, but Joe, I really have to bow down. I know all of us read it, but your piece on the wire was, like, really, really smart. All the things I was wanting to say, and, like, now I'm just like, what Joe said.
Well, thanks, because I kind of agonized over that thing. I was telling Nick earlier offline. I was kind of really, 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 like, I need to get this out, but I was kind of bracing for the hurricane to follow, and it kind of didn't, and I'm happy for that. And I wonder if possibly part of that was just because everybody had so worn themselves out yelling about it, that finally they were just like, ah, good. Like,
yeah.
You have that. You go with it.
So I agonized over your piece because on the one hand, I agree with everything you said, but on the other hand, I just snorted cocaine out of a hooker's cleavage just this morning. And you wouldn't believe what I'm doing right now. So it was difficult.
Boy, when you run out of coffee, you really go to extremes, huh?
I didn't run out of coffee. Like, as you, the point you were making before, a person can do two things at once. Like, I would make that same point. I was at home for the holidays for 2 weeks during which this entire thing happened. Like, the Wolf of Wall Street was not open yet when I left, and we don't have the internet in my parents' houses.
That. Tragic.
So, yeah. And then, like, when sometimes my dad does manage to achieve it, I just stayed off it. So I missed the whole thing and then came back and saw the movie kind of without all of that stuff. The only thing I'd heard was, I think, Joe, like, really early in the beginning of your expression of bad anticipation, like, Scott Tobias, who I really admire as a critic, had said, like, isn't it okay for Scorsese to do something more interesting than condemn people that we all know to be bad? And I just feel like the movie didn't do anything more interesting than that. Like, I just don't, I just felt like there was, like, on the one hand, I'm not too interested in the, like, condemn or celebrate thing, because I think he kind of either does both or does neither. Like, I just didn't get what the idea was. And the other reason I don't like that debate is that I feel like the movie's actually not well made. And I thought this during the Saving Mr. Banks conversation you guys were having, too. Like, I think that there are movies, especially in award season, that become these really polarizing, are you for or against the movie's project, that can kind of take you past, like, did they even make the movie well? And, like, I would defy anybody to find three interesting shots in The Wolf of Wall Street. And it's 3 hours long, and it's a Martin Scorsese movie. And it's visually totally boring. Like, and unimaginative in what it's showing you and the order in which it shows you those things. Like, can we talk about that?
I disagree a lot, but I haven't seen the movie in a couple weeks, so I'm like sitting here being like, what is the shot? What can I think of to disagree with him on? Like I said before, I can't disagree with it being too long. I do think it's rambly in a way, and like, I took American Hustle to task for being rambly and unfocused, but I kind of let The Wolf of Wall Street go for it because I found it exciting and like cinematically exciting to be part of. And there, like, I don't have a good explanation for like why, like Joe, you know, you're saying if you've already figured out that Wall Street guys are evil, why would you want to sit through a movie that's 3 hours about why they're evil? But I find it this kind of interesting, like, ticket into the world of the awful people who are running the world, who have no interest in me as a person being female and liberal and not wanting anything to do with that world. And I don't, like you guys are saying, like, I'm not, that life does not appeal to me. There are very few scenes in this movie where I'm like, oh man, that looks like fun. And I was like, and last night I watched The Great Beauty, which doesn't really have anything to do with anything, but it has these great party scenes that I actually did want to be at, even though they're supposed to be exhausting. And that, like, I kind of connected to that vision of debauchery more than in The Wolf of Wall Street. But I think that it's muscular and macho and like really nastily influenced filmmaking that I find interesting, and I find being in this world interesting and exhausting. And I think what DiCaprio is doing does a lot for it, is a lot for that. I'm kind of a defender of him overall, but I mean, I'm interested to hear you guys talk about how you think he's doing amid a movie that doesn't interest you that much. I don't know. I hated being in that world, but I'm really glad that I was in it at the same time. And I got to the end and just admired so much of the guts that it took to make insane scenes like a yacht crashing that cost a fortune that make the movie really fascinating. Like, that line between the character and the people making it is fuzzier than people want to say, as I think you've really hit on really well, Joe. But I think that makes it more interesting for it. It's like that fuzziness is what has us all talking about it so much, and what has me thinking about it so much, even though it's been a couple of weeks since I've seen it for the first time. I think about it all the time, which is kind of how it wound up on my top 10 list.
That's a good segue away from the condemn versus celebrate, is Leonardo DiCaprio and the performances. Because for me, I'm somewhere in between on this movie. I don't dislike it, but I don't really have any affection for it, so to speak. So I'm right in the middle, I think. And the thing that got me through and that excited me, the only thing that really excited me, was the performances. So I'm wondering about the people who didn't like it.
Well, I probably haven't left a lot of gray area about my general feelings about DiCaprio, but I have to say, in this case, I didn't think he was the problem. I
put that on the poster.
Yeah,
not the problem.
Capital, not the problem. Like I think it might. I mean, taking The Departed aside, because I still love that movie and him in it a lot. Compared to the Aviator or Gangs of New York, I totally understood the casting of him in this. I think that I just feel like he's a really kind of obliging actor who will do whatever you kind of want him to do and will put on the costume and will do the improv if that's what the scene's about. Like, he kind of does that stuff with gusto. I just don't usually believe that, like, his costumes always feel like costumes to me. His attitudes tend to look like attitudes. In this movie, I think that was okay. I didn't really have a sense of, like, I can't cast Jordan Belfort in a scene outside the movie and really successfully imagine what he would do in that scene. Like, I can't predict him. I didn't feel like that was a character who really lifted off. It was just sort of a cipher for the movie to turn around, in a way.
I'm not sure I follow. Can you...
Yeah, just like, if Leonardo DiCaprio was in the middle of the movie and is the thing you kind of need for the whole movie to happen around him... I didn't really leave with a sense of a character there who kind of lives and breathes and who you could write 5 more scenes about that are different from the ones that are in the movie and guess at all what he's like. Like, I don't really know who that person is. The movie was preoccupied with the kinds of stuff Jordan did, not with, like, Jordan as a character study.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's, though, as a result of this movie being a sales pitch from him, in that voiceover there is intentionally meant for him to be kind of the... you know, seductive guy bringing us into this world and selling us on it. So doesn't, in that context, he then have a reason not to reveal too much about himself?
Yeah, kind of. Like, I see what you're saying. And I see a few reasons why the movie might not... I just don't think the movie's agenda... maybe this is another way to say the same thing you just said, but I think its agenda is not to go deep on who is Jordan Belfort and what is he like. Like, what are his qualities as a guy? Like, so that didn't strike me as a flaw, even though it did mean that there was... one less way for me to be interested in what was happening, because I just wasn't interested in what the movie was doing instead. And there was just too many scenes that I thought individually didn't earn their running time or felt incredibly familiar for a movie that should want to feel like, oh my God, we're pushing the envelope. Whoa, this is really extreme. Here's another scene where two people have sex while the cute dog chirps at them from the foot of the bed. Here's another scene where a guy gets held over a railing on the top of a big building. Here's a 4-minute scene about how there might be chop on the way to a place before we just cut to the obvious disaster that's coming. Like, I just, that all felt like not, it just didn't feel challenging in the same way that Hugo didn't feel whimsical to me. So I think I just have a late Scorsese problem. Probably.
That scene where Jonah Hill and
John Bernthal. Yeah, I know exactly what scene you mean.
Right before Bernthal gets arrested, that scene felt like it went on for 29 minutes. It felt endless, just absolutely endless. I feel like there's probably a lot in the movie that was overlong. That was the one that sort of, as I was watching it, sort of screamed out to me, like, what are we doing still in this scene? We all know where this scene is going. Can we just fucking get there without, like, 18 minutes of just... dicking around quite literally at times in this movie. Just, I don't know. The thing with DiCaprio, I don't think he's bad in this. I feel like this is sort of how I felt like after Gatsby, when there was a lot of like best DiCaprio's been in ages kind of thing. And I see DiCaprio giving a very DiCaprio performance. And I don't know whether I've just lost the ability to see like gradations in that. He's sort of delivering what he always delivers, which is, I think, I see a lot of the attitudes he puts on, but I feel like it never goes very deep with him. I think he's a very good movie star for movies that don't seem like they should be about movie stars, if that makes any sense, where he's just sort of like, he's of actors who are like, he's an actor's actor. He's their movie star, basically. You know what I mean? Where it's just sort of like, he's not this like matinee idol, even though he sort of like came from those roots with Titanic, where he's just sort of like, he's trying to be this actor's actor who is working with nothing but the most like established and minted directors ever. And among that sort of like actor set, he's the movie star among them. I don't know. That kind of doesn't make any sense, I guess. But like,
yeah, I see. I mean, the actor thing is something that he's like kind of put on as a defense after Titanic. Like he kept just making like the most prestige, but also kind of least interesting choices. And what I like about this is that it's getting him back to this physicality that he hasn't. I mean, someone compared it to what's in Gilbert Grape, like the way the big comic scene of the way he's contorting his body. And it really, like, I've seen what's in Gilbert Grape a million times, and yeah. That felt dead on to me. Just the way that he was kind of letting go. Like, it doesn't feel like, I mean, as much as I've defended him, I kind of agree that you see him and you kind of see through all of the seams of what he's doing. And the fact that he kind of let his, like, physically let his body loose, it felt like a real big step to me. And that scene is really funny and really interesting. And it's really just an unbroken take of him flopping his way to that car. And I get that, you know, that Scorsese getting out of the way of his actor, but I think that's one of the shots, at least, that I thought was really exciting. Well, to answer Nick's question from a while ago.
Yeah. I did think that joke was funny when, like, the vertical door of the Lamborghini is going to fuck him, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I have to lift my leg even higher. Like, that was a funny thing that happened in a shot. Like, I didn't think the shot itself was, I thought the movie was devoid of shots that were interesting as shots.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I am one of those people who thinks it's the best he's been in ages, but I am also, like Nick, I haven't been impressed in a long time, other than The Departed, and I think it's for just the reasons you're stating, Katie, is that he's really, like, he feels more committed to this than he has in a long time, mm-hmm. And it's at least, like, a breakaway from, even though he's playing another eccentric, you know, gazillionaire, which he's done 3 times now, by my count.
Wait, what's the third? Aviator
and
oh, Gatsby.
Gatsby, yeah. Yes.
Oh, and I guess
so
Calvin Candy, too.
Yeah, so he moves away, you know, he's moved away from, like, the guy mourning his dead wife to the eccentric millionaire. But he does like to repeat himself. But the performance didn't feel as repetitive as he has to me for a long time. Even though the movie is very repetitive. But what I was thinking about when you guys were just talking about it, and, you know, the way he is as an actor made me think of Bruce Dern's, like, the sort of sub-narrative of Bruce Dern's Oscar campaign. They have kept bringing up that Alexander Payne didn't want a Dernsy moment.
Yeah.
Which reminded me also of, going way back, Steven Spielberg... talking about Schindler's List and how he was consciously trying not to do Spielberg shots.
Hmm.
I'm thinking maybe that's what DiCaprio needs. I don't know if he'll ever get there as a director to say, I don't want Leonardo DiCaprio. Can we try this?
Yeah. He does seem like that kind of famous person who won't work with that director. But, you know, the person who doesn't have someone around him to be like, yeah, just, like, go do something really weird and different.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I thought he was really great in Gatsby, too, which is a very Leonardo DiCaprio kind of part that I thought brought out something kind of vulnerable in him that, in a way that, I don't know, in a way that Shutter Island didn't or something. I want 10 years down the road, can we get the story about what happened with Django Unchained and why that character didn't take off? I have so many theories about, like, why that performance wasn't great, and I don't think it's his fault, but...
Hmm. Katie has taken us way back to 2012.
I know. It's the Wayback Machine.
Well, let's move from Leonardo DiCaprio. I want to know who's everyone's favorite performance from the movie.
Oof.
Because it's such a huge ensemble of, like, people doing little bits, which adds up to a lot of bits, of course, but...
Yeah.
My favorite might not be her, but I do want to talk about Margot Robbie, because Joe's theory that all the people who think she's great is boner-based... But I think she's great, too, so I ruined Joe's curve.
Yeah, you really did.
But I just thought, I was really surprised by what she managed to do with a role that seemed kind of thankless in a way. I thought she was really funny and sly, and she kind of did the game of chess between her and her horrible husband well. And you see why she's a girl who would marry an idiot like that, but why she might give him more trouble than he expected. I thought there was a good energy between the two of them. And then when things get really crazy dark at the end, I thought she sold that part really well, too.
I feel like the movie just does not give her enough to... I'm going to try and say this without being, like, insulting and, like, just smack me back. to justify the level of praise that she's getting. At most, what I'm getting from her is I would like to see her in something else. And, like, that's more than where I was before after seeing her in Pan Am. But, like...
You're the one person who saw her in Pan Am?
Oh, I saw it, too.
I don't know. I feel like so much... And, I mean, I sort of, like, hammered the boner-based thing, like, hard, just because, like...
Joe hammered the boner-based
thing. Oh, my God, Nick, stop it! I knew I was going there, and I could not stop myself. I'm very sorry. No, but so much of the movie is just sort of like, so much of her role is she's naked and has a Bay Ridge accent. Like, there are a couple scenes where she sort of starts approaching this something else is going on, but I feel like the movie just sort of like continually cuts her off. And like, even the part where like she finally like makes her power play, that scene just becomes DiCaprio rampaging through the mansion and then crashing the car, and like all of your attention then becomes like the daughter in the car and whatever, and you're sort of on the edge of your seat. And where did that leave her to go from there? You know what I mean? Like, there was just nothing. I felt like there was nothing really to hold on to other than she was very, very sexy. And she was. Like, she was gorgeous. And I'm going to be that very, very, very typical homosexual and say my favorite performance was Joanna Lumley and just sort of leave it at that. I honestly really enjoyed her. I thought she was like an oasis of something in that movie. I don't know.
You have really committed to your homosexuality.
I'm doubling down. I'm just doing it. I don't care.
I thought Kyle Chandler was really good in that scene where they're on the yacht and yes. kind of dating mm-hmm. each other. And that yeah. that did become a scene that I felt like both actors felt like they had a real partner in the scene that wasn't Scorsese. Like, I just feel like so many people in the movie were playing either to their director or to it felt like you could see how many of the scenes had been kind of directed to be improvised. And I thought, and in a way that I imagine, like, the idea there would be, like, this is a movie about people who are making shit up by the seat of their pants constantly. It will be helpful if those scenes are improvised. But I thought a lot of performers actually looked weaker in those moments. Like, Margot Robbie, I thought, was really great in moments that were scripted. Maybe not as strong in moments where she was supposed to fill the time with improvisation. Kyle Chandler's scenes, I actually thought you almost couldn't tell, which was a really, I thought was a real virtue of that scene especially, but even yeah. some of his others.
And Jean Dujardin, too. I don't even know how he could improv because he doesn't really speak English, but I thought his scenes had a nice looseness to them as well. He fit in really well with what was going on in the New York scenes when he showed up.
I thought he was brilliantly cast, so props to the casting director.
I also like Spike Jonze in his one scene. Oh, yeah. We have gotten more Spike Jonze.
I could have spent more time in that office in general.
Like, yeah. That was a good moment all in all when you've gotten away from McConaughey, who is, I think, amazing too. I'm also double in the tank for McConaughey, but I love that one scene.
Yeah, there's just no slowing him down lately.
I know.
That scene to me was sort of the tip off that I'm really just not going to enjoy this movie though, because it was so like, here, take this giant chunk of this movie and just like fuck around and just literally do the dumbest fucking thing you can think of and just and do it forever and just keep on just like pound that chest, dude. Like, I don't, like, who cares? Like, whatever, we've got nothing but time. Nobody has anything left to do.
I'm curious if we'll get like the DVD, how much extra footage there's gonna be.
It's two whole extra discs of Matthew McConaughey pounding his chest.
Even though I despise all the, like, Wolf of Wall Street versus American Hustle thing, I am curious about whether or not you guys think that, like, the attraction of a bunch of famous actors playing dress-up and just improvising, if you think the movies are comparable in that way, if you have any feelings about why people are drawn to one versus the other, because it does seem, for whatever reason, I don't really understand it, that you can't like both.
That drives me crazy that you can't like the idea that you have to choose between two movies that happen to be relatively stylistically similar and come out around the same time. It just like adds to more of these dumb debates where everyone's like, well, you're an idiot for liking this movie. No, you right. are. And everyone's fighting over movies that are pretty good and everyone agrees are pretty good. Like, My theory is that it's because Saving Mr. Banks isn't really taking off. Like, no one has a cheesy movie to beat up on, so they're just like picking their prestige movies to fight each other over. It's the dumbest, biggest waste of time. Mm-hmm. I think like 10 years down the road, like whichever one, like we won't, you know, this didn't happen with No Country for Old Men and There Will Be Blood. They were both like two, you know, neo-westerns made by auteurs that were out in the same year and everyone was fine with it. Like, I don't get why it has to be a battle this year.
That's actually a really good point about those two movies, because they were, that would have been very easy to sort of, and I remember even, I liked one much better than the other one, and I still don't feel like that year became like a thing about trotting out one versus the other.
Maybe it's because Twitter didn't exist yet.
Maybe, yeah, maybe.
Can you believe Twitter ever didn't exist?
I feel like there's, I think American Hustle gives, it's almost too good of an opportunity for some people to pass up, in that it's, so much of it is reminiscent of Goodfellas, that it's so easy for, if you're like a Scorsese person, if you're a Wolf of Wall Street person, and you really want to like sort of slam this movie that's getting maybe more attention than you think it deserves, it's so easy to just be like Scorsese light. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's all just sort of like rhetorical, like batten down the hatches kind of.
I mean, I the reason I ask is I'm just so naturally drawn two movies that are about like great actors, like sort of like, let's throw a whole bunch of people in here and like, and put fun costumes on them. And it's like,
and yet you didn't like The Butler.
My take on The Butler has been mischaracterized by everyone. Hearing like in the comments, even on my blog, I keep hearing how much I hated it. And I'm like, I actually gave it like a B-. Like, I thought all the stuff with the presidents, like, almost every scene with the presidents was embarrassing, but I liked the rest of the movie.
We cannot keep reminding you that a B- and an F are the same thing. This time, I'm going to tell you again, a B- is a failing grade.
So, anyway.
American Hustle doesn't, I just feel blocked in some way. It doesn't remind me of Scorsese at all. Like, I'm just confused. I find that pairing confusing.
I do too.
It's the expensive music on the soundtrack. It's the camera roaming around all over the place. It's the conflicting voiceovers. I mean, it's really Goodfellas. Like, I think that's the main
point of reference. That is the case. I feel like the filmmaking seems more. I get the people who say it's a Paul Thomas Anderson ripoff more.
Yeah.
In terms of like one director style, but I do think there's so much on the surface of that that is reminiscent of Goodfellas, all the thing that Katie just mentioned, that I feel like that I can see why, where I wouldn't call it Scorsese ripoff either, but I can see why that's what the thing that people go to.
I guess I'm having a disconnect with it, like Nick, because, and as Nick said in the previous podcast about, you know, Russell's style is always like actors shake him in a can, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And to me, it just felt like a David O. Russell movie to me. It didn't even feel like a departure for me from his movies. And like to hear everybody like wanting to say it's his version of somebody else's movie, I know it really feels like a David O. Russell movie to me.
Yeah, I guess I feel like the camera in a David O. Russell movie, especially these recent ones, just feels like it's really being guided by the operator catching the performance that's catching fire at a given moment. Like, the visual ideas, for better and worse, are just all subservient to who's doing suddenly what in front of the camera. Mm-hmm. And the Scorsese movies just feel so opposite to me in that way. Like, everybody, even when they're doing crazy things, are doing it within, like, an already established design, kind mm-hmm. of. Like, I think the editing kind of messes with this because she's so willing to, like, match shots that don't match at all if those are her favorite performance shots, which to me in Wolf of Wall Street just led to so many weirdly, distractingly wonky edits. But I feel like there's no question that the actors are subservient to Scorsese, and Russell just seems like he's all about sprinting around, possibly literally, like, catching what he can catch. And I get the, like, it's like that game where you have like a four-letter word and you change one letter at a time, and suddenly you go from like, you know, frog to hero or whatever. Like, I can see how American Hustle is like Boogie Nights, which is like Goodfellas, which is like Wolf mm-hmm. of Wall Street, but American Hustle and Wolf of Wall Street don't remind me of each other.
No, they're nothing alike. I would agree. Although, I mean, there are period films with a lot of famous actors with weird hair.
Mm-hmm.
And Shea Whigham.
for too little time in both cases.
Oh man, I totally forgot about him being in both movies and me being like, oh yeah, that guy, and then he was just gone by the time I realized it was him.
Yep.
Good for him.
Well, we probably exhausted Wolf of Wall Street.
Are you kidding? We're just getting started.
We haven't even started shouting at each other yet.
So really quick, any thoughts on the Producers Guild and the Writers Guild? The obvious thought, but I still think it's worth discussing, is what is going on with Dallas Buyers Club that keeps winning these nominations? Like, do you guys find it well written?
I don't remember anything about how it was written. Like, I don't remember the screenplay sticking out to me in the slightest.
I don't either, I admit.
But the movie itself has kind of faded from me. Like,
It seems to me like people like it because of the performances. So that's why I'm curious about why it's doing so well in other aspects.
Is that not just a thing where people like the movie a lot?
Well, that's true.
I feel like this is where we come down with guilds sort of every year. I think ultimately it's these are these people's chance to promote their favorite movies. And ultimately, I can't get too down on that. Sometimes it's a little mystifying. The thing with the WGA that I'm a little bit more confused by is, like, with so many things being deemed ineligible, at what point does this, like, Lone Survivor nomination sort of lose all meaning?
Yeah. What are the big ineligibilities this year? I didn't catch up on that before the nominations happened.
Philomena was not eligible.
Mm-hmm.
12 Years a Slave.
Short Term 12.
Llewyn Davis was eligible and got snubbed.
Snubbed, right. Yeah. Yes. Snubbed, I say.
Okay, sorry. Got left out.
No, I know. I fall into that trap too.
Generally because this particular guild doesn't allow nominations for non-members. So generally anything foreign is always out. Like Blue is the Warmest Color, which is adapted, you know, ineligible. Or, you know, often if it's not foreign, it's often people who are just getting started in their careers who maybe are not members of everything, like Dustin Cretton for Short Term 12.
Yeah, it makes it a very American studio-based award.
Mm-hmm. Which is their prerogative, I guess. Their guild.
But it really just sort of, like, shows you how few... like, how shallow that pool of, like, prestige-adapted movies are.
That
once you get past that, like, sort of, like, top surface... And I understand that, like, some years are deeper in one category than others. But, like, sometimes just sort of... it really stops short at, like, August Osage County, Captain Phillips of Fort Midnight, Wolf of Wall Street, and something! We gotta do something!
So it's 12 Years a Slave that will take that spot, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised if Philomena...
Philomena is a threat, too.
Man, Philomena. Ants everywhere. I love it.
I was home for...
The question is, is the ant demographic represented in the screenwriters branch of the Academy?
That is an interesting question.
I am literally so dumb that I thought we were talking about insects there for a second. I'm sorry. I am back. It's like, is there an ant scene that I forgot? Were there, heirs in Saving Mr. Banks? Did she dance? I'm okay.
As you recall from the last time, I saw Philomena with my parents over Thanksgiving break. So then I'm home for Christmas, and, like, the first day I'm home, I'm talking to my mom, and my mom goes, "Have you seen that movie Philomena?" She's like, "I loved it." I was like, "Yeah, I saw it with you guys at Thanksgiving." She's like, "Oh, that's right." And later that day... my dad and my mom and I are all talking, and he says to me, he's like, "Have you seen that movie Philomena? I really liked it." And I'm like, "Good one?" And he's like, "What?" And my mom and I are like, "Is that not a joke at mom's expense?" He's like, "No." And I'm like, "I saw it with you. What the fuck?"
I somehow wouldn't be surprised if Philomena turned out to be the Men in Black device. Like, it does just kind of neutralize me for, like, an hour and 40 minutes.
But also, it's like, that is the movie that they've been raving about all holidays.
Yeah.
It's Philomena. So,
there you go.
Watch out.
Part of me thinks that's still the Weinstein Company's best shot at Best Picture.
It's crazy to me that August Osage County has so failed on that count, but it does seem obvious at this point that that is not happening for
that movie. That movie improves in my mind the more I think about it. I just think of it so fondly. And so, was it Wesley Morris who wrote that wonderful, wonderful thing I linked to on Grantland the other day? I think it was.
He did about, write it. Yeah.
About just what, like, an absolute kind of powerhouse, over the top, like, hurricane of a two-lead movie that is. And just, it sort of captured everything about what I see in the virtues of August Osage County. Even just, and it certainly acknowledges the fact that, like, the directing is really kind of amateurish at times.
Yeah.
But, like, but at some point, I just stop giving a fuck because there's Meryl and Julia, and, like, and I think most of the, about half of that supporting cast really gets it. But, like, when those ones are on there, like, it is, it's really something that could have been, with a real director, something really special. And as it is, it's just sort of like a fucking amazing fun time, I think.
Yeah. And there's always still the play that was something special, and, you know, that yeah. still exists in the ether and will probably get revived 10 years from now with, oh God, predict now who in 10 years will play the Meryl Streep part.
Selena Gomez, probably.
Nice.
Sofia Canedo.
I actually couldn't work out from the Wesley Morris piece whether he liked it or not. I read it twice, and I, maybe as it's a- on Runway, when you sometimes feel like, wait, is she in the bottom three or the top three? I can't tell based on what they're saying.
Maybe it's a Rorschach block, because I really thought that he liked it, but maybe it's because I liked it. And
but
that's
then he
what
says
I
that thing where if she'd given this performance in 1983, she probably wouldn't have a career now. And I think I eventually followed what he was trying to say, but I think he doesn't like her in it. I don't know.
I don't.
I didn't read the piece.
Meryl Streep, sorry. Okay. Yeah, and I think he was actually making a point about how, like, this is the kind of part that if you play it early in your career, even though you never would because she's like 70 or whatever, like, you will only ever be remembered as this because you go so far over the top and the role kind of lends itself to iconicity anyway, mm-hmm. that it's amazing she's built the kind of career where she now won't be frozen in our minds as Violet. Like, I think that's what he was saying. Mm-hmm. But it also sounded like he just thought she was bad in it, and this could have really been a problem for her if she'd done it earlier.
Oh, okay.
But also the movie's really fun, but also the movie is a hot mess.
I didn't read it that way. I felt like after reading that he liked it in a way that was completely separate from, like, awardability. But
yeah.
that it was, I don't know. I think it might have been just like a Rorschach blot of an article that maybe that's why I pulled that out of it, but I don't know. I thought he really liked her.
I just Googled it to find it, and, like, the second hit was Wesley Morris, Black critic, compares August Osage County to a Tyler Perry film.
Oh, Jesus.
I know. It's not like a Rush Limbaugh website. They seem pretty psyched about it. Anyway, I think it's hilarious that he compared it to a Tyler Perry film, because that, like every Tyler Perry movie I've seen has, like, that scene of everyone sitting around the dinner table screaming
yes.
at each other and, like,
yeah.
making weird jokes, but it's I never made that connection in my head, but it makes
I thought that was really ingenious.
Yeah.
Also, I rewatched Beautiful Creatures on HBO yesterday, and just because Margot Martindale is in both, it really made me think of it. But, like, there is a scene in Beautiful Creatures where they're all at the dining room table and shit goes down, and, like,
and Emmy Rossum, like, causes the room to spin.
The entire room is spinning around, and, like, the laws of gravity no longer apply, and it's the exact same scene as August Osage County. I'm just going to say
I hated that scene so much.
Oh, Nathaniel.
I thought that movie was a freaking disaster, and I thought that scene was the worst scene in the movie.
Oh, you're so wrong. I'm sorry.
I just want Alice Englert's career to take off.
Now we're realizing we should have done a podcast about Beautiful Creatures, because I despise it so much. We could have fought about it for 45
minutes. Oh my god,
minutes.
I would have fought
yeah.
you on it.
I would have yelled about accents for most of it.
Because I think everyone in it, except for Emma Thompson, is terrible.
I think Emma Thompson
wow.
is on the verge of terrible in it too, but she's, I kind of like that about
yeah.
it.
Oh man, I could not disagree with you guys more. And apparently Alden Ehrenreich is in what is on IMDb being called Untitled Warren Beatty Project.
What?
A story centered on an affair Howard Hughes had late in his years with a younger woman that has basically everybody famous rumored to be.
That is not ever going to happen.
Warren
Beatty hasn't made a movie in years, and it takes him like 10 years to make a movie.
I know. Like, I don't understand what this even, like, where these things came from.
Should make. Like, I would like to make a movie about being a Lothario. You have been trying to get away from that for 20 years.
Right?
Please don't do that.
What an odd thing to be there. Like, anyway.
But he definitely should have done Boogie Nights. I don't know what he was thinking.
He was supposed to be...
here. I knew from the second we logged on this morning that we were going to talk about Warren Beatty and Boogie Nights.
He was supposed to play the Burt Reynolds character?
Yeah.
Oh.
I knew that.
That would have been interesting. Yeah. God, he would have been even more disappointed losing to Robin Williams.
Oh my God, that gif of him losing would have been classic.
So we have to wrap up.
I'm going to go stew about Beautiful Creatures then.
Just go watch it all afternoon.
I am, just to spite you.
Pen your manifesto.
He's just going to
He's just going to play it in the background like DVD commentary. Like suddenly a scene plays loudly.
Exactly.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Nathaniel.
So Nick suggested we share a New Year's resolution so that can be your exit.
Okay.
Once again, thanks for listening to The Film Experience. And I am Nathaniel. And my movie resolution is... Well, I chose Spirit Guide characters for the year, but there's a post about that that you can read. But in terms of, like, movie watching, my resolution is to actually write something, even if I don't publish it, within 24 hours of seeing something. Because I always wait, and then I've forgotten all the details.
Mm-hmm.
Katie Rich from Vanity Fair.
So with me not going to Sundance this year, I'm realizing I'm going to be in a giant hole for indie films. So basically my New Year's resolution is just not to use that as an excuse not to catch up on things, because I'm pretty bad about that otherwise. And, there's a lot of movies I see at Sundance usually that deserve my attention. So help me, those of you going to Sundance, make sure that I see the stuff that's worth it.
And Joe Reed from The Wire.
My resolution is to complete, and I know I'm like pigeonholing myself in now, complete my little watch all the Best Actress nominees of the 1980s project that I started this year, and that has been thus far fairly fun and enjoyable for me, and like pretty illuminating considering like there are a lot of crazy ass movies you did not realize were nominated for Best Actress in the 80s.
So is this something, are you doing it chronologically and even rewatching, or just stuff you haven't seen?
Just stuff I haven't seen, and not really chronologically, just sort of like catch as catch can.
Okay.
Basically, it was my excuse to watch Crimes of the Heart, and now I'm just going to keep going with
okay. And Nick Davis from Nick's Flick Picks.
And I'm going to blow everybody's mind this month by not only posting a top 10 list for this year, but posting my top 10 for last year. How about
Whoa.
That?
Whoa. Wow.
I think you've waited long enough.
I think
it's really ready now, especially since, you know, you get in those loopholes where you're like, well, I can't post until next week when I finally will have had time to see this. And I've literally still not seen any of those movies that I was waiting until I saw them.
You're breaking the time-space continuum, Nick.
I am.